Welcome to True Worldview, your place for intelligent conversation on ultimate questions and the issues that matter. I'm Christy Johnson. I'm here with Paul Dean. Today, we're talking about the shame and tyranny of contact tracing.
That's right, Christy. And as always, this is a big topic. It seems like every day in this COVID-19 crisis, something else comes up. And this kind of first came across my radar, not that I hadn't heard of it, but in terms of thinking about it deeply, I mean, I had thought about it, but in terms of thinking a little bit more deeply, a couple of weeks ago, our governor, Governor McMaster of South Carolina, he actually had a video conference, I guess it was a live stream thing, with the leadership of the South Carolina Baptist Convention.
Interesting.
And Yeah, it was interesting. And pastors were allowed to tune in. And, you know, he's done this once or twice where he gives us an update on the situation. And, you know, at this particular point in time, we were talking about when certain things are going to be reopened. And we're in the middle of that now. But he was saying, because, again, you're talking to Baptist leaders and pastors. You know, a lot of pastors are wanting to know when we could reopen the churches and all that. And, of course, the fact is that in South Carolina, the churches have never been shut down. Mm-hmm. And Governor McMaster has said more than once that he would never shut the churches down. That's a First Amendment issue. Of course, shutting down restaurants and businesses, that's a First Amendment issue as well. But that's not what we're talking about today.
Right.
But, you know, he has said more than once, hey, yeah, go to church, but make sure you social distance. And if you can meet outside, do that. Of course, if you have to meet inside, make sure you social distance and all the rest. And he was kind of talking about loosening all that up for Mother's Day. And all these pastors had questions that, in many cases, just between me and you, it was almost like, men, let's not ask those kinds of questions. Let's let sleeping dogs lie. And yeah. It's not that I'm trying to, you know, skirt the law or, you know, skirt the governor's wishes. But, you know, sometimes you can ask a question and plant a seed in somebody's head and they never even thought about it. And
yeah.
We shouldn't be giving the government more reason to clamp down or more power than they actually have. But anyway, I don't want to get too far afield, Christy. Forgive me. I'm coming to a point. I promise. So he was saying that, you know, yes, by Mother's Day, I'd love to have people in churches, should be a happy day, and all that. It's kind of interesting the way he was going about it. But he said, now, by that, I don't mean shoulder to shoulder. Once again, you need to keep the social distancing, and you need to make sure that you're doing the contact tracing.
Mm.
And then the leaders and the pastors asked a couple of questions. Well, oh, yes, we'll do the contact tracing. How do we do that, and who do we report to, and all this? And I was like, mm-hmm. Unbelievable, because while I hadn't thought deeply about it, or, you know, like I said a moment ago, I'm certainly aware of what contact tracing is. I know it's something that I want no part of. And mm-hmm. Here are these Christian pastors who are willingly trying to figure out how best to be government agents, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's just a problem. Anyway, I've been talking for, you know, like half an hour now, so we're going to bring in some other information. But if you want to comment on that, I'm just saying I was shocked. I was floored, and it's something that we need to talk about.
Yeah, and, you know, here in my county, I'm in the Bay Area of California. You know, our pastors are also trying to figure out when can we go back to church as soon as possible, because in our situation, the churches have been closed down along with almost everything else. And I really have appreciated the stance that my pastors have taken, where they're trying to be a good witness to the community. And you know, it's a very heated subject over here, and they don't want to be a bad neighbor and put just wrong thoughts in people's minds, like, oh, why is the church meeting when they've been shut down or whatever? But at the same time, they have been trying to get us back in church as soon as possible. And I think it's come from a place of humility, which I've really appreciated. But, you know, I do think it probably is not the smartest thing to, like you were saying, just ask those kinds of questions and say, okay, how do you want us to do the contact tracing and how can we report? And it, you know, we don't want to be in cahoots with the government. You know, we want to be trying to worship God and fulfill our calling and be with each other as soon as possible. So let's talk about contact tracing and some of the things that are going on at other places across the country. I think of the mayor of Kansas City, and I think that you have some more information about what's going on over there in Kansas City.
Well, sure. Yeah, this would be Kansas City, Missouri, and Quentin Lucas, the mayor, he's demanding that churches provide him with the names and the addresses and the telephone numbers of anyone who shows up to worship. And again, you know, you said, you know, we don't want to ask certain kinds of questions as pastors. Well, yeah, part of that reason is we don't want to invade the privacy of others because
right.
All kinds of nefarious results, you know, can pop up. But, you know, Liberty Council founder Matt Staver noted that Kansas City is requiring that churches submit a list of members and attendees along with their names, addresses, and phone numbers, as I said, to city officials. Now listen, for tracking and surveillance purposes, that's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. And the new order, now I'm quoting from WorldNet Daily here, the new order states that by recording names and contact information, the health department will be able to more quickly trace, test, and isolate individuals who may have been exposed to COVID-19. Now, a lot of folk think that's a good thing, and that's why these mm-hmm. pastors are asking Governor McMaster, hey, how can we help out with this? All, you know, they think they're, you know, all it's about is stopping the spread, and they think, you know, contact tracing is the way to go. But listen, Staver points out that the Germans did this very thing to the Jews, collecting the names and locations of all known synagogue attendees in the early days of the Nazi regime. Businesses, for example, you know, part of the plan there in Kansas City, they're allowed to reopen with 10% of their occupancy or a maximum of 10 people. Mm-hmm. But as they do that, they actually have to take down contact information for anyone in their building more than 10 minutes in order to conduct contact tracing if there were an outbreak.
Okay, why more than 10 minutes? That doesn't seem to make sense to me, because if you have COVID-19, if it's really as deadly as they say, and then you're in there for even 5 seconds, like, shouldn't that matter too?
Well, I mean, it kind of gives you the idea that something more is going on here, you know, than just quote-unquote trying to save lives or whatever the case may be. But anyway, these particular restrictions, religious gatherings are under those same restrictions. This is what the city wants to do. They want to quickly trace, test, isolate individuals. This is their language. And of course, you know, here's my wife and I were talking about your mom and I were talking about this, you know, with contact tracing. Let's say, and I'll tell you more about this perhaps in a few moments, I may or may not, but, you know, I have a friend who actually contracted COVID-19. He's fine now, but he let us know that he contracted it, and others found out about it, and that's fine. And I essentially self-isolated for a couple of weeks. Like I say, I may say more about that, I may not, but the bottom line is because he came down with it and because I had been around him for just a little bit, several days earlier, under contact tracing, what they would do is, you know, he's got COVID-19, and then somebody, you know, a contact tracer would ask him, okay, who's he been in contact with in the last 2 weeks? He'd write everybody down. And what would happen is, you know, he would give them my name, and then they'd come to my door and they would lock me down for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a voluntary thing on my part. It wouldn't be self-isolation like in the middle of everybody else is self-isolating. I would be forced to be locked down, and there are other consequences, but that's what mm-hmm. we're talking about. And so, you know, part of the issue, Christy, is the technological dynamics with this. I mean, anyone through Bluetooth who's identified as having been in proximity to an affected person, they're going to be contacted by the government. They're going to be ordered to be quarantined, or they could be at least. So, again, these are some of the issues that are on the table, and that's why I think it's important for us, again, as I've said, to discuss it.
Yeah, and this is really interesting and, quite frankly, pretty alarming, the fact that they're talking about doing this kind of thing and we're all accepting it as normal, or as, like you were saying, perhaps the group of pastors earlier saying, oh yeah, of course, you know, we want to do that. It especially with this app that they're trying to build that would, with Bluetooth, you know, identify people that were in close proximity to it and to an infected person. And the app, from what I understand, that, you know, I don't even know if this is one app that they're building or if it's a bunch of apps, you know, a network of apps. But from what I understand is that you voluntarily sign up to be a part of the app. And maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later as well. But it reminds me actually of some of the technology that we honestly, most everyone in our entire culture, the technology that we use on Facebook and photos places for AI facial recognition. And I've listened to some really interesting information about AI facial recognition and how essentially government agencies and other agencies are using the databases of facial recognition for things that most of us are not even aware of, for catching criminals or for other things. And the truth is that once we open up that door, that they could not only use it to catch criminals, they could also use it to trace people. And I don't know that that's something that's happening right now. Maybe it is. But the sad thing and the scary thing is that we all opt into this every day when we post a picture on Facebook. And we just want a little bit of convenience and to save ourselves 5 seconds from having to tag someone in a picture on Facebook. We just want it to pop up and say, is this so-and-so? You know, is this Sarah? It used to say that and you would say yes, but now it doesn't do that. Now it automatically knows and it just tags them, and it's creating this really large network of pictures of individuals where some really scary things can happen. And a lot of people are calling for this type of technology to have the brakes put on it for a while, because it is a scary thing. And they're starting to come to realize that, wait a minute, we can't just do whatever we want with this information. But those people who are saying that and saying we need to put the brakes on that don't get their voices heard as much as the people with the money or the people who want to use it for their own purposes. And you know, the pictures, it's just interesting to me how our culture and how especially my generation, we value convenience really over privacy now. And I know a lot of people who would download a contact tracing app for convenience, so that they can know if they've come in contact with anyone with COVID-19, or for working with the greater good. For the greater good, quote unquote, or for any number of reasons. But the truth is, it is trading your privacy for that. And I think that, especially in my generation, we don't quite value our privacy or understand how much of a big deal it is to just give away our privacy like that. And in the case of contact tracing as well, a lot of times, like you're mentioning with, you know, getting a phone call and saying you've come in contact with someone and being summoned to quarantine, this type of thing, it's not voluntary. And so it's really scary as you go down the road. It goes from, oh yeah, I want a little bit of a convenience, and then all of a sudden you're giving away your privacy, and then it's an opt-in, but then all of a sudden it's not voluntary. It's not an opt-in. It's happening, and then that's our future.
Yeah, it's a scary future too. You know, it's all part of, and Thomas Luongo points this out, it's all part of this push that's been underway for many, many years now, this push for total surveillance. And, you know, contact tracing is a nice sounding euphemism, but, you know, again, as Luongo says, the goal is to finish off the last vestiges of anonymity and individuality started with the destruction of financial privacy during the Clinton administration. Now, I happen to think a lot of this started long before that, but, you know, we certainly understand that this push for total surveillance was ramped up, astronomically or in a multiplicative way after 9/11.
Exponentially.
Thank you. That's actually the word I was looking for. Thank you. And, you know, like you said, if we don't realize what it means to give up our privacy, I mean, like it seems like, well, we're all just trying to, you know, make everybody healthy, keep everybody safe, that kind of thing. Well, it's what they're going to do with the information after they have it. It's what they're going to do down the road. It's it's, you know, what if there comes a point where you're not able to travel unless you can prove that you've never come in contact with someone with COVID-19 or that you've had the vaccine? And listen, those things are not far-fetched. That's what Bill Gates wants. That's what he's pushing for. You know, he's got no medical degree, and yet he is a major voice in this whole vaccine debate, and he has the clout because he's a billionaire, and there is going to be, it's already underway, but we just haven't felt the full force of it yet, but there's going to be a major pressure, you know, to take that vaccine when it comes out, whether you think it's a good vaccine or not. And by the way, I'm not totally anti-vaccine.
Right.
But we need to be able to make the decisions for ourselves, because some vaccines are dangerous. And when you give too many vaccines at once to little babies, that can be dangerous. And certain vaccines like the flu shot, you know, you can contract Guillain-Barré. And so I'm just simply saying, if we come to a point where, hey, wait a minute, you have not received this vaccine, you're not allowed to travel, you're not allowed to go into this restaurant, you're not allowed to go into this grocery store. Those are the kinds of things. Listen, you know what I do part-time, Christy? I'm a swim coach. You know, I wear many hats, and as long as you guys are growing up and you know, your youngest daughter's still swimming, I grew up swimming, and anyway, been coaching for a long, long time. Well, of course, Al got a video from a local high school coach, and I don't know if USA Swimming put this out or somebody else, but, you know, they're wanting us to social distance if and when we get back to swim practice. And I, you know, if you know anything, you do, but to our listeners, if you know anything about swim practice, basically you might have 6-8 kids in a lane. We all congregate at the wall, and then, you know, the coach sends us, and, you know, we start swimming, and you're swimming in a line, and there's no way you can social distance in a typical swim practice.
And you're swimming in the same water as everyone else.
Sure. But see, now what they're going to do is, they're only going to allow like 3 people in a lane. You're not going to start from the wall anymore. One person, you know, they've actually produced these underwater attachments to the lanes where, this kid starts at this place in the lane and this kid, you know, starts in the next and the next, and they maintain distance, and you've only got like 2 to 3 people in a lane. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You can't make a swim team work financially if you've only got 3 swimmers per lane. So if you want to kill the sport of swimming, that's what you're going to do. But the point I'm making is it's all part of this push that the tracing, the contact tracing, it's not only going to be used to, you know, make sure that you've got your papers and your rabies shots, you know, and I'm being tongue in cheek there, but it's to make sure, because it's on your phone, because it's on an app, it's to make sure that you are social distancing. I mean, you've seen all the videos where these overzealous law enforcement. Now, by the way, let me just say, I'm so thankful to those law enforcement officers who have not been overzealous. They've kind of, you know, if somebody's not causing trouble, they're not going to break you up. They understand a lot of them apparently understand the crisis just like we do. But you do have overzealous law enforcement officers who have not only busted up crowds and or three or four people and arrested people. Have you seen some of the videos where they're throwing people on the ground and putting their knee on their necks? Let me tell you something.
That's crazy.
Yeah, those types of individuals should not be allowed on the police force. It's just it's just an excuse to vent their brutality. But anyway, it's I'm getting far afield. I'm not letting you jump in on the conversation. It's going to be used to enforce social distancing, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's very sad and not to beat the same drum over and over again, but it's true that especially my generation and people born after me as well, we don't care about our privacy, it seems, because, you know, we have our thumbprints on our phones, we have our voice assistants that recognize our voices. You know, we have one of those Google Homes and it knows when I'm talking and it knows when my husband's talking. And there's probably countless other things that we've just given away our privacy. And to be quite frank, we don't care. And and that's really sad, because what's going to happen is people just like me, who are just, you know, wanting convenience or whatever and not giving a thought to our privacy, maybe because we're so privileged and we haven't lived through, you know, a war time or really hard things. We just think, oh, that's cool, let me try that. I wonder what it's going to take for us to actually take our privacy seriously. And maybe, I mean, like, it seems to me like all of a sudden it's too late, because now we have this contact tracing and total surveillance and wanting to just track people through their phones. I mean, this sounds like North Korea level stuff, to be honest, that I never thought would ever happen in America. But the reason I never thought that this would happen in America is because maybe I'm just not an unthoughtful millennial. And that's how a lot of us are, until all of a sudden our freedoms are taken away. And until all of a sudden, you know, like you said, we can't get on a plane without having a vaccine, or we can't go into a restaurant without this or that. And then maybe that's when people from my generation would finally start to wake up and say, wait a minute. But what honestly I see happening is most of them just saying, oh, okay, sure, I'll do what you say. And then just, you know, do whatever they say. And then it's sad.
Yeah. No, it is sad, and I think a lot of them are that they're just like you're saying, and it's not because they're not intelligent; it's because they've never seen what could happen, in part, and they've got their minds on other things. And yeah, it's an instant, convenient generation, and I get that, but it's something we need to be awakened to. And you know, we've gone from, I take a number of classes in different kinds of fields, and in many of them, I'm confronted with like HIPAA regulations, you know, where medical information, you are not allowed to, you know, have access to someone else's medical information. Yeah. They can't give it to you. I remember when my mom was very sick, I couldn't just call the hospital and get an update on her. I mean, it's against HIPAA regulations. You can't reveal anything. And now we've gone from that to, oh, we're going to have an app and everybody's going to know about your medical information. And you were standing near a COVID guy, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And
well, yeah. And maybe the difference that they're trying to hide it under is the fact that it is an opt-in, but still, you know, it's voluntary. You're giving away your medical information for the sake of the greater good, but still,
yeah,
I feel like it's going to start as an opt-in. I mean, not to get all, you know, worried, but I feel like it's going to start as an opt-in and then it's just going to go downhill from there.
Well, I think that's right. And not only that, so you've got the app, but the government is already recruiting tens of thousands of contact tracers to go out and, you know, sign people up. And so there's a proactive dynamic there. And, you know, we've already got people in our culture, and we've mentioned this before, Christy, who, you know, again, because of the fear and because of what they've heard on television and because of, you know, they feel like, yes, they're doing their civic duty, but they don't realize the implications and the the ripple effect and the ramifications, but people who will turn their neighbors in if they're not social distancing. So there's going to be tons and tons of people are happy to be contact tracers and get paid for it. And now again, the governor is calling for churches to be contact tracers, and all these pastors that I heard on the Facebook Live, they were happy to comply and create their own database. And, you know, so you may not have to force too many people, Christy. I mean, like you say, most of them will probably opt in voluntarily. But if they don't do that, they'll be recruited. And of course, if you're not, if you're not willing to be recruited, then you're going to, you know, you're probably going to be turned into a social pariah, if you know what I mean.
Mm. Yeah. And really it's creating a lot of, I think it's going to end up shaming a lot of people. That's what I started the broadcast is with, is the shame and tyranny of contact tracing. Yes, it's tyranny. They're controlling the population. And it is, they really are, I think, shaming people, because think about it. What if you're the church that doesn't do the contact tracing? What do you think the culture is going to say to you, or the government officials? They're going to say that you're not doing your part. They're going to crucify you, and you're going to be shamed into complying. And not only that, the COVID-19 patients are going to be forced into isolation and be shamed, you know, as well. And it's really sad to see that instead of reaching out, instead of being compassionate and loving, I think it's really just a scary thing. And I think that shaming someone into doing something is really one of the worst things that you could possibly do.
Yeah, I think so. There's no doubt about that. It really has no place in our lives, and it shouldn't have a place in our culture. I'm thinking of Thomas Luongo again and something he said. He said they want us snitching on each other and suspicious of each other. This is the most pernicious form of social control ever devised to distrust basic human contact and interaction because there are germs in the world. And, you know, if you think about a statement like that, I think he's hit on something. Mm-hmm. And this is why we've talked about, you know, the problems with social distancing and the concerns that we have. And, you know, we don't want to sound out of step, Christy, or like you say, not be compassionate. But I think we really are. And listen, I experience it. I don't know how often you're able to get out, but even this South Carolina, compared to a lot of other places, has been relatively loose, not from my perspective, but you know, comparatively speaking. But you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, these places have been packed out regularly. People hang out there. The grocery store, it's full, it's crowded. But you go to these places, of course, they've got the X's on the floor where you can stand and the arrows and all this. Well, most of the people are pretty compliant about, I'm even compliant about that because I don't want to invade someone's space or be, you know, seem as, you know, contrary, regardless of how I might personally feel about it. Mm-hmm. But here's what I'm getting at, and I've mentioned this before, but I want to make this larger point. People, when you're coming their way, you know, they look at you funny. They back up if you get too close, especially if you're not wearing a mask. Now, I don't wear a mask, and I won't for lots of other reasons. They're actually not good for you, but they actually create more problems than they solve, and there's even a debate as to whether or not they solve anything. I don't think they do, but that's another issue. You may or may not
agree.
Well,
I'm wearing a mask at the stores.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
And you can think ill of me if you want. I'm just kidding.
Well, actually,
I'm sure you don't.
I don't. I don't think ill of you. I just hope you don't get ill. But anyway, no, I'm kidding. You can't get ill just from wearing a mask or the grocery store. I'm talking about if you wear it long, you know, for long periods of time.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm saying people that we already look at each other funny and you know, so to distrust basic human contact, that is heartbreaking. I don't know how else to put it, Christy. It is absolutely heartbreaking. Yeah.
It is heartbreaking, and it is it's very sad because I think one of our basic God-given longings is to be in community with each other and to be near people and to celebrate with each other and experience pain with each other. And now we're not able to do that. And who knows when we will be able to just hug our neighbor without feeling afraid or scared or worried that the government's going to find out that, you know, we hugged that person. I mean, we had someone from Matt's work, he brought some soup over to our house because he made too much. And he's a person who lives by himself. And, you know, when he left, my husband said to me, I wonder if he just made the soup so that he could, like, see us. But the whole time, I'm sure both of us were thinking, like, is this even allowed? Is he even supposed to be here? And he didn't even come into our house. You know, we invited him in, but we're not supposed to gather in houses. And so he just stood out there on the door, and it was just really sad. And it really is, I think, heartbreaking is the perfect word for it.
Yeah, it really is. So we need to keep praying and need to keep talking about these things and raise awareness levels, not to be contrary, but to inform and you know, only when we're informed can we actually maybe stand together if need be. We don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future, but stand together if need be on some of these things. You can't stand alone. It won't work. I mean, even if you had the fortitude and the courage, you know, maybe somebody like Solzhenitsyn or somebody, but anyway, I'm just going off now.
But it's time to end the broadcast.
Yeah, I think so. Let's stand together, but I'll kick it to you to end the broadcast.
All right. Well, thanks for listening today as we talk about this really challenging and scary and heartbreaking subject. But I think it is important for us to know the dangers and to know what's going on and to be aware as you said, to raise awareness and to stand firm where we need to. So we just want to bring another voice to the conversation. So we hope that you'll join us next time as we do that on True Worldview.
You've been listening to True Worldview, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical perspective. To access archived broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Thanks for listening, and join us next time on True Worldview. And the gospel.